And the cowboy hats were doing pretty good on the lady.
I've got a collection of cowboy hats.
Well,
you know
come on over to Cactus Cates. You walk out with the woman.
I can sell you some vintage cowboy hats.
The woman of your choice.
All right.
Really?
So we have people in the studio today, but we also have a caller calling in. I don't know who these guys are.
All right.
Klaus does know who they are, so let's let him introduce them, and then we'll talk about
We have one visitor in the studio who's welcome, who's visiting me, Dave Kendall, who's was the chair of the Missoula Democrats and has become a close friend. And he and his girlfriend are actually toying with the idea of Sedona as their next residence. So, we'll see if we can keep him here. And then, of course, our speaker today is Dan Singel, who graduated from Harvard with a degree in history and then got a PhD from Columbia and taught at an upstate college, the name of which escapes me. Which one was that, Dan?
Hobart and William Smith.
Yeah, right. And he's written a ton of books, and he's writing one now that I think is called The History of Intellectualism or something like that.
Modernism.
Okay.
Close.
Way beyond our pay scale. But we're going to talk today about Dave.
Well, not Mike's pay scale.
But not Mike's. We're going to talk about Dan's predictions from last time around, and he scored 2 out of 3, as he'll tell you.
Otherwise, they were disastrous, I got to say. But what's the significance of today, Klaus?
Well, today, of course, is Martin Luther King Day. He was born in January 15, 1929, and then assassinated in April of 1968. We celebrate his birthday on the third Monday of every year. He's a famous and influential American leader in trying to end segregation. And he made a speech that people who follow these things say was the greatest speech in American history in the 20th century. And that was called, of course, his speech that featured I Have a Dream. And it's been quoted endlessly. I can't say but that I feel some really emotional connection to the day because he was terrific. Not perfect, but terrific, and he inspired hordes of people to join his marches and then was tragically assassinated. It seems like only the good people get assassinated, from Lincoln to King to both Kennedys.
So Trump is safe.
I was holding my breath for Obama until his term was over.
So that's right. You're absolutely right, Klaus. We were marveling before we went on the air that there's a Martin Luther King Day march in Camp Verde, Arizona.
Oh,
and
my
I had to mention that we're having an MLK march, a Martin Luther King march, in the second most conservative city, Prescott being the most conservative, in the county with the most Republicans in Arizona. 15 counties in Arizona. Yavapai County has the most percentage of Republicans. Of course, most Republicans live in Maricopa County. But so here we are celebrating MLK Day right here in the Verde Valley with a march in Camp Verde. One of the things, Klaus, that the rest of the country doesn't realize, and I think certainly Tom does and Steve does, that there's this and certainly a lot of Trump supporters, this is underlying resentment that we even celebrate Martin Luther King Day. You understand, especially here in Arizona. We declared it a holiday back, and then the governor coming in denied the holiday. They canceled the Super Bowl. They did all kinds of things at the time. This is 30, 40 years ago. They're still in Arizona, and believe me, there is it's huge. There is this seething resentment that we celebrate this great man's presence on the planet and the words that he said.
Maybe that's a good thing, Mike, because that means he's still relevant. He's still controversial. In some ways, that tells you the fact that he hasn't been turned into just a sort of good guy icon, that he actually stood for something that upsets a lot of people.
Excellent observation.
We have somebody else in the studio, Klaus. Who's this guy over here? He looks
well,
like he's from Montana.
I said it's Dave Kendall. He was the leader of the a central committee of Missoula County for 6 years, right, Dave?
Yeah, exactly. It was a long 6 years because in Missoula, Montana, we have a little nice island of Democrats, but the rest of the state is a big fight. We have to fight everything we get up there all the time.
Missoula is where Democrats win, and the people in the rest of Montana often refer to Missoula as the People's Republic of Missoula. But I think we should switch to Dan because he's on the phone. He's probably biting his nails to impart his wisdom. Dan, why don't you tell us about your 2-1 score from the last time around and then take it from there. I should also warn you that Steve is in a bellicose mood. So
You better watch it, Dave.
Bellicose. We don't use those words
for you. Yeah. You know,
so that's a Harvard word.
He's going to try to figure out how to beat you up.
Steve went to a lowly state school. He doesn't know what bellicose means.
Yeah, damn right. I went to Oklahoma State University.
All right. We're ready for it.
All right, Dan, go ahead.
Who's going to be president, Dan?
Let him start by telling.
I was with you in the studio a year ago, if you remember, and at that time I predicted three things. I told you I thought Pete Buttigieg was going to be a major contender in the Democratic race.
I didn't think
he would actually get the nomination, but he was going to be a major player. That was met with incredible scorn and guffaws, and everyone was saying you must be crazy, but that turned out to be true. I also said I thought that Beto O'Rourke would not run, but that if he did, he'd regret it very quickly and would pull out. And I think that happened. However, I also said the same of Joe Biden. I said I didn't think he was going to run and that if he did, he wouldn't do well and would make an early exit. He didn't do that. So I was kind of 2-1.
Well, 2 out of 3. 2 out of 3, I think, as we call this.
Yeah, 2 out of 3.
No, I had two right and one wrong. Right.
Yeah, that's good. In your class,
but in any event,
66%.
I'll give you three for this year, and then we can talk about them. Kind of set out a little controversial material to jump into. First of all, I will predict that Michael Bloomberg is going to be a major player, and that he will end up as a possible nominee. I'm not sure he's going to get it, but I think he'll be a real contender down the road.
Who's his vice president?
No, for president.
Who's his vice president, I'm asking? Who's he going to run with?
That I don't know, but my second prediction, I absolutely know who Joe Biden will run with, and that's Stacey Abrams. They've talked about it. This is all pretty much in the works, and if Biden gets the nomination, Stacey Abrams will be his running mate, and I think that will make a dynamite ticket.
I think it's the biggest mistake the Democrats ever made since Hillary.
She's very charismatic.
She's very good. She's able to relate to Republicans.
Mike, why do you say that?
She doesn't bring any votes. She doesn't bring any votes.
She
doesn't bring enough votes.
Particularly with minority voters and younger voters.
She discourages more votes than she brings.
I don't think so. I think she'd be really... She has a tradition. Back in Georgia, she's very good at reaching people out in the rural areas. Of course, they have to know her better. But I think she'll be there to help with turnout among the groups that would be less interested in Biden initially.
So Biden and Abrams, that's great. The Washington Post had a great editorial. I really liked the headline. They said it's Bernie's time, but it's Bloomberg's race. The Washington Post editorial said it's Bloomberg's time right now. It's Bernie's time. He's on the ascension right now. He's at the top of the heap, but it's Bloomberg's race, which Dan, our guest this morning, from the Wisdom on High. In this case, he's high in Missoula, Wisdom. Montana.
I'm in Rochester, New York.
In Rochester, New York. The third thing
I'll say, and that is, I think it's going to be very hard to beat Trump. And I think the only two candidates that have a realistic chance of doing it are Biden and Bloomberg.
Dan,
happy to explain that. But keep in mind that when I was on your show last February, I told you my favorite candidate was Sherrod Brown. So don't peg me, you know, as, you know, too much of a moderate. I'm between moderate and progressive. Sherrod Brown was my first choice then.
Of course, he decided not to run. I had a guy.
So I'm not saying this in terms of my own preference. I'm saying it in terms of trying to do a cold-blooded analysis of what's likely to happen. You started by asking me who I thought had the best chance of winning.
Yep.
And I would say either Biden or Bloomberg, if they can get the nomination. Now, that's the big question.
Now, one of the things that I've heard from millennials and other young people is that neither of those candidates particularly excite them, and we absolutely, absolutely need their votes to win. What's your response to that?
Well, I think they will vote for anyone against Trump. They will come out this time, having learned their lesson the hard way last time. But I think Stacey Abrams would help a lot with them, having this very dynamic African-American woman who's a wonderful speaker, who's, you know, very, charismatic is the best word for her. I think that would help a lot with them. But my guess is the big problem is going to be Buttigieg calls future former Republicans and also Republican-leaning independents. They were the margin of victory in 2018. I think they will be that again in 2020. They'll be the crucial swing vote. And Biden and especially Bloomberg would be the best options for winning them over.
Dan, historian, Harvard grad, do you believe that right now at this time the momentum is falling away from Biden in droves? I think the Democratic National Committee has heard so much about Biden from both establishment Democrats and new Democrats that they are pulling back. Within the next month, I think Biden is going to be toast.
That will depend on not the Democratic establishment, but on the voters of Iowa and New Hampshire. And one way or another, they'll decide it. But right now, you know, I've got the polls up on the screen, most recent polls, and he is definitely dominating them and in many cases leading by double digits. And he's actually come up a little bit. If you look at the Real Clear Politics average, he's come up one percentage point, which is almost 10%.
So we're coming up on the Iowa.
So he's actually,
Dan, we're coming up on the Iowa contest soon. How soon are we coming up on that? And he's leading in Iowa. I'm not sure who's leading at this point. I know there's polls. In 2 weeks, we'll see some people actually voting. I'm not sure that that the polls were very predictive this time. The last time we had an election, of course, was, Obama was running for re-election. But before that, you know, how predictive were the polls at this point in the race?
They're totally all over the place. I mean, the two most recent polls, one of them showed Sanders with a good lead. The Monmouth poll that came out around the same time, the middle of last week, showed Biden with a substantial lead. I don't think either poll means that much because 60% of Iowa voters have said they're basically undecided or could easily switch.
What was the percentage of undecided?
60%.
60. That's a lot.
I think when
that's
we started talking about this, Dan, we figured that it would be clearer who was the leader by this point with all these debates and stuff. And what I see, and I think a lot of other people, is that it's still kind of up in the air. People still haven't made up their minds, and the voting's about to begin.
Well, there are groups that have kind of made up their minds. I think African Americans are very, very heavily tilted toward Biden, almost 50% of them.
Yeah, but there aren't that many in Iowa, right?
Pardon?
There aren't that many in Iowa.
That's not going to help him in Iowa. If he does poorly in Iowa and New Hampshire, then that could ricochet into South Carolina, and you could see Biden's support among black voters there drop off. That could happen. I think Biden will do reasonably well in Iowa and New Hampshire. He'll be okay. But I don't know that. I'm just guessing. And if he does poorly, then yes, all bets are off. If he does reasonably well, comes in second or a very close third, or wins, then he's in pretty good shape.
The New York Times today did something they've never done in their history. They endorsed two candidates, one from the progressive side of the Democratic Party and one from the institutional side of the Democratic Party. And the Times was sort of honest about the fact that they were basically institutionalist. They basically supported American institutions. And what they said is that American institutions have turned out under Trump to be much, much weaker than they thought. And that's why they're beginning to look at Elizabeth Warren as well as Amy Klobuchar, who they think is a better moderate candidate, Mike, than Biden.
Let's be real clear about this. This was a big deal. Dan, of all the mornings that the New York Times comes out with their endorsement, it's the morning that we're doing a show on, you know, a little casual talk about with this sort of vague historian from back east somewhere.
Some guy we don't know.
And a bunch of, you know, guys with...
from Montana.
Yeah, exactly. So, but this is a big deal. So they pick these two candidates, and the reason they pick them... what's more important here than their picks, they pick Elizabeth Warren as their progressive candidate. They pick Amy Klobuchar as their establishment candidate. First of all, the fact that they did that shows a recognition of the Trump era beyond anything I thought corporate media could do. So my whole mantra for the last 3 years has been, it's different. Everything's different. Stop basing your current predictions and your thoughts and your political ideas on the last election. It's almost over as far as those sorts of predictions goes. Now, you're reading some polls on it. I can't rail against the polls as much as I would like to. It depends on which poll you're reading, and I'm assuming that Dan, our expert this morning, is reading some high quality polls, and so at least they have some version of reality.
I guess, Dan, my question to you is, I mean, as the Times said, and I think they're exactly right, Bloomberg's the guy who has shown he can manage the largest city in the United States and get reelected over and over again. So if you looked at just credentials, he has the best credentials, and Mayor Pete has the worst credentials because he's run a little city of 180,000 people. How does Bloomberg go from all of this spending, vast spending? How much has he spent? $700 million?
Well, he's willing to spend $1 billion, and if that's not enough, $2 billion.
How does he go from that outsider position, Dan, to getting the actual nomination?
Dan, while you're thinking about your answer, the elections used to cost $780 million nationwide in this country. Since Citizens United, it cost $4.4 billion to get elected. In other words, this is a combined total. Used to run all our elections on $780 million. Now it costs. So we need to give the listeners some... Because the whole money thing becomes, you just can't, our minds can't wrap around that sort of thing. But so a candidate like Bloomberg coming in with the kind of money he has, he's got the skills, he's got the policies that people like me like, and he's got, what's that? The money.
So how does he get the nomination? Because he's coming in from, I guess, left, right field, center field. He's coming in from center field into the game.
Well, I think for all the reasons you just mentioned, I think having the money is awfully important, but you do not get elected on money alone. You can't. Candidates in the past who spent tons of money, who have not had the right message have gotten nowhere.
What'd you say, Ross?
He has a very good message. He is excellent on all the major Democratic issues. He's been out there fighting for climate change, working with the Sierra Club. He has been a tremendous advocate of gun control, and he's also been heavily involved with the Democratic Party. He was one of the major reasons why we won the House in 2018. People don't realize that.
Go ahead.
Pardon?
Expand on that.
He basically funded so many of the Democratic House candidates who were challenging in districts that Trump had won. So he knows how to spread the money wisely. But most of all, he's very, very good on the issues. He's there, I think, in case Biden falters. And I do agree there's always the chance. Biden seems so fragile. And there's a real chance that he does falter. And if he does, I think Bloomberg is the one who will sweep in and pick up the pieces and be a major centrist challenger. The other reason, really quick, but I think this is extremely important, American voters tend to believe that people who have a lot of money and have been successful in business, or so they think, would be very good at managing the economy. And we are now at a point where, you know, Carville's phrase, "it's the economy, stupid," has been turned, I think, into "it's the stupid economy." And it's the thing that's uppermost in voters' minds when it comes to Trump. Bloomberg, as a self-made multi-billionaire, you know, $60 billion he managed to make, is someone who would be perceived as someone who would do a very good job of keeping us prosperous. Okay. So I think that's a factor, and you and I may not, you know, think along those lines. I believe average voters do.
Dan, you said something before that surprised me. You said that it would be very hard to beat Trump. My thesis has been since the election that he won it actually so narrowly, really, if you look at it, by 68,000 votes in Wisconsin, et cetera. And I'm not sure that he's made a lot of friends in the meantime. I was under the assumption that it wouldn't be so very hard to beat him unless we totally screw up.
I'm looking right now at the results of the latest Gallup poll that were released about 20 minutes ago, just as we started. His approval is up to 44%. And that's getting close to the point where, you know, he can command a majority in the Electoral College. You look at the various head-to-head races between Trump and the various Democrats from different key states, and he was losing most of them about 3 or 4 months ago. He's tied for the most part or winning them now.
You're talking about certain states.
Can you
right?
run down those states, the key states?
Key states would include states like, well, Michigan is the one state in which Democrats are consistently beating Trump right now. Bloomberg, incidentally, doing the best of any of the Democrats in beating Trump. Wisconsin versus Trump. Trump handily beats Warren and Buttigieg, ties Sanders. Biden beats him in Wisconsin. Florida. Biden barely squeaks it out, but the rest are kind of tied. Let me see if I can find a few more.
But Ohio, right? I think that gives us the idea.
Whenever you look at these head-to-heads, if you looked at them 3 or 4 months ago, the Democrats were beating him very easily. Now it's getting very close.
So the trend
is moving in the wrong direction.
The Atlantic agrees with you wholeheartedly. They've said that, and this is why, is that this blessed approval rating will not drop. You know, it's hard for us sitting around this table and on these microphones to imagine that Trump has any more, gets out of the 20s. I see him in George Bush territory in 28, 27, but and I see my cat beating Donald Trump in a fair election. You know,
I would vote for your cat myself.
Well, there you go, and I think most people would. Yeah. But
no,
he doesn't have
problem.
A cat.
Most, I wish everyone looked at it the way we do, but that's not the reality.
That's
and
right. You're
that's
absolutely
not
correct.
Why you have he has a 44% approval rating in the Gallup, which is one of the harder polls to move up in.
I think the thing that I see is that we really don't know what's going to happen. And I was in a car dealership getting my car repaired, and the stuff about the impeachment was on the television. And the woman, very large woman, said, he hasn't done anything all the other candidates haven't, all the other politicians haven't done. And I thought, Trump has done something that George Bush would never have done, George W. Bush would never have done, Ronald Reagan would have never done, Carter would have never done, and Clinton would have never done. They never used the office in this way. And
absolutely.
yet this is the rhetoric we hear, and he's going to hit this campaign with, I don't know, $1 billion, Klaus, do you know?
I don't know what the number is, but why do you say that? What is the reason that from 3 months ago when we were handily beating him, now it's moved up to where it's, where it can go either way? What happened in those 3 months?
I have a simple answer, Klaus. It's the stupid economy. You know, you go back into 2019 and people were worried about a possible recession. There were lots of signs. If you look at the Dow Jones, it's now in record territory. People are looking at that and they're saying, this is a president who knows how to manage the economy. We think he may be an idiot in every other respect. We don't care. The only thing we care about is how well he does for us financially.
That's absolutely right. In other words, the fact that we're paying for his stupid tariffs to the tune of $40 billion, the reason he has at 44%, Dan, you're absolutely correct. It's a Dow Jones average, but somebody's got to mention the bombing of a foreign leader who we are not at war with. We bombed him to smithereens in violation in war criminal status. I mean, this I believe this was a war crime, and
but that'll fade, I think, Mike.
But I think that's why he's at 44%.
The boost from assassinating
the next assassination.
Yeah, and the other thing is the Iranian response has been very mild.
His approval rating, taking out someone like Soleimani, raises his approval rating among a lot of voters who don't really understand implications.
Yeah,
right.
Low
and
information.
The Iranians have very long memories. They haven't forgotten that we overthrew their democratic elected guy in 1953.
Yeah.
They haven't forgotten that. I mean, they're never going to forget. We assassinated when he wasn't really even participating in military operations.
That's right.
Their equivalent of MacArthur and Rommel and Patton and Eisenhower all rolled into one. We did it publicly and we gloated about it.
Well, there was no imminent threat. That's what makes him a war criminal. The show here, we're 30 minutes into a 45-minute show. I'm going to ask you, we're supposed to be talking about who's going to be the candidate. I want to, I have to admit, I did talk about this way more than I ever want to. And so let's talk about some tickets here. Let's talk, because don't forget, there's two people on a ticket. I got two people, and so now I'm going to, and we've been very serious because we're talking to a serious historian here. Dan, what's your last name, Dan?
If you only knew me, you wouldn't say that.
Well, we got to say that because we're trying
to... I'm terrified about the situation in the country. That's my main reason for being serious at the moment.
Well, we're trying to impress our listeners, so we're trying to build you up. So, yeah, we don't want to find out that you're scared. You're a cold, hard, fat guy, and you're going to tell us who's going to win, and we're going to say, I'm going to throw out a couple of things that people come to me with, which may sound a little silly to some of you, but Trump Donald Trump is there's nothing sillier than Donald Trump being president of the United States. There's nothing sillier than that. So why couldn't a Bloomberg Michelle Obama ticket win? A Bloomberg Michelle Obama, unbeatable, right?
I wouldn't go there, Michael.
I need the expert to respond. Please.
Okay, but
I'd love it if she would be willing to do it. I'm not sure she would, but I think I wouldn't be surprised, incidentally, if Bloomberg did the same thing that Biden is considering and pick Stacey. I could see that. But whoever either Biden or Bloomberg runs with, or Buttigieg for that matter, has to be a black woman.
I don't know if it has to be a black woman, but there has to. The structure of your thing is correct. So if it's Biden, he has to have someone who will energize the progressive base, and it could be he could run with Elizabeth Warren, and then people would say he's going to be in there one term, and then we'll get the structural changes we need. He could run with Julian Castro or whatever it is, but that's the right structure. But suppose it's a progressive, Dan. Suppose it's Elizabeth Warren gets it or Bernie gets it, then what's the ticket look like then that would be most effective?
Well, they would need essentially a centrist of some sort to balance it out, although I could see them doubling down, either of them, particularly Sanders I could see doubling down. He might just pick Warren, although with the bad blood that's developed, I'm not as sure. But I really don't know what the one thing I would say is if either of them is nominated, then I would bet on Trump winning another term.
If either of who is nominated?
Warren Sanders or Sanders. And Warren, no matter who their running mate is.
I don't think so, Dan, because people are, I think, as you said earlier, or maybe it was Klaus said earlier, people are pretty much set in their ways, and people are anti-Trump. And I don't know. I see these social science statistics, and one of them, of course, is that people vote against a candidate more than they vote for a candidate.
True.
I'm not as sure as everybody else that it matters as much whether we have a progressive or a centrist candidate to run against Trump, as long as they're a good, effective candidate. I'm not sure that I mean, there's none of these candidates that I wouldn't vote for and support and give money to. Right. And I think that an awful lot of Democrats are in that same place. So that's my take on it. Who it is I know everybody is deeply involved in supporting this candidate or that candidate, but I think it's probably more important to focus on other races. I think that whoever we choose as a candidate is going to be our candidate. Trump is going to be an absolutely ruthless and dishonest opponent. He'll kill somebody else in order to – or start a war in order to get elected. I don't know what he'll do.
Well, I think the problem is the swing voters who are going to be critical because it's going to be a close election. And the swing voters, and here you're talking about independents who lean Republican, but who can be persuaded to come over to the Democratic side. And you're also talking about Republicans who are turned off by Trump, but still like how he's managing the economy, and who still have loyalty to their own party. If you're looking at them, I do not see them voting for either Warren or Sanders. They might stay home. They might go and vote for Trump and hold their noses. But they're going to be the critical factor in the election. I do not see a highly progressive Democratic candidate winning them over.
That's very good.
I think someone like Sherrod Brown, in fact, could have. I think he had he presented himself as a less threatening progressive, but nonetheless, what he wanted to do is very close to what Bernie wants to do.
I had another
That's why I liked him. I liked him because he could do that.
Yes, I have other people talking up Sherrod Brown to me a lot because of that. But that my, the
but I'm worried. I'm thinking only in electoral terms. I'm not thinking of what's going to happen once they're elected, because if they're not elected, it makes no difference.
How about this in 2020? Before you laugh, the audience, you can laugh at home. That's fine. But Bloomberg, you ready for it? A black woman.
I'm ready.
A black woman, incredible popularity. This is right out of the Trump book of plays. Name begins with O. She has a TV show. She has a magazine.
Mike.
Well, people are afraid to say. You think she's going to? The devil's going to jump up if you say her name?
I think that's if you look at the way Trump.
Nobody said her name yet.
No, I know. But look at the way Trump picked his vice president. Even Trump didn't pick someone wild and crazy. He picked this button down religious right winger, this rigid, calm, steely eyed, religious fanatic to some of us. And he didn't pick somebody from the media. He picked somebody from politics. Even he made a kind of calculated political choice.
And you think that mattered at all in his election?
No.
Okay.
Or not much.
Well,
I think it helped him convince the party.
I'll come at it a different way and say I think someone like Stacey Abrams would be a stronger running mate for Bloomberg than Oprah.
Okay.
And the reason for that is I think she is someone who could be very easily perceived as the successor president if either Biden or Bloomberg only serve one term. Oprah, people would have their doubts about that. And Oprah, I don't think, has the same connection to younger voters that someone like Stacey would have.
That's a good point.
Have Stacey, why not just stay with that?
Well,
she's ready to run. She said, "I want to run for vice president." She said that several times.
They felt that exactly who you talked about, the future ex-Republicans that Buttigieg mentioned, Oprah would appeal to those voters. They're in her audience. And it would shake things up to the point where it would be, I don't know.
I think that would be distracting. Yes. I think people would be arguing about Oprah as being showing a lack of good sense and picking somebody from the media just because they're big in the media. I think you'd end up having a whole lot of discussion about the vice president, which you really don't want in a presidential race.
Okay.
And I think the swing voters that we need to target will rush to the polls to vote for Bloomberg and probably Biden as well.
I believe you're correct. I believe that's what the Washington Post saw so clearly. And I have to admit, speaking at a much lower level, I'm sitting there watching my NCIS, and I see these Bloomberg ads. They're extremely effective because they're focused on what we want, and they're focused on Trump. They're focused on health care.
Yep.
They're focused on actually progressive issues. And, oh, by the way, I can beat the snot out of Trump.
Yep, you got the exact message.
I wonder what that means. I agree with both of you that the Bloomberg's ads are not just all over the place. They're very, very good ads, and they're very well and intelligently focused on Trump's weaknesses. And I think that says something about his abilities, as building up to being a multi-billionaire the honest way, and his ability to actually manage. And if you've lived in New York, I mean, it is, New York is like, Klaus has lived there, it's like a mess. And to govern New York is like governing a kindergarten with very large kindergartners.
You're talking about competing ideologies. Yeah,
and people and groups, Mike.
That's what I mean.
I mean, the thing about Bloomberg is that he's got a lot of organization, very well staffed in many states, and he's got some highly competent people, who target these ads where they should run. I mean, it's just like Bloomberg in business all over, right? He delegates, but he delegates to people who know what they're doing.
Wouldn't you want someone like that as president?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think he'd make a good president. I don't think he can get the nomination, Dan. I don't see how he gets into the party. Because you have very strong candidates. You may not like Elizabeth Warren, but she's run a very strong campaign. And Amy Klobuchar, for example, who the Times is endorsing on the conservative side, has pretty much all the qualifications. She's from the right state. She's effective. She shows she can win in conservative areas of her state and so forth and so on. So you have a... It's kind of a heavy lift to bring in somebody like Bloomberg, no matter how good he would be.
Dan, we got to wrap this up. In your voice, and I'm saying this because we have some announcements. We might be able to come back to it before we go off the air. So, in your voice, who are we going to be voting for?
I think either Biden, if he holds up, or if he doesn't, Bloomberg.
All right. Excellent.
That's my prediction for this year.
And some black woman as a vice president.
Yes.
But probably not Oprah. Okay, but Michelle Obama got in it. It would be a whole new ball game, and people would be...
I would love to see that. I'm skeptical that she wants to do it.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody says no. Makes it even more important. All right, listen, yep. Folks. Thank you, Dan. And don't go away. Folks, we want to talk about, we want to again mention that it's Martin Luther King Day. We're talking about a giant of American history, even though we're in Arizona. And he had lots and lots of things to say about people and about humanity. And we're glad here on Democratic perspective that we take this day to at least to recognize such a brilliant thinker, such a brilliant speaker, and such a representative, not of his people, but of humanity. We have a Cottonwood Democratic over in Cottonwood. We are sitting here in Sedona, fat and happy, but in Cottonwood tomorrow we are having a Democratic Party meeting at the Red Rooster Cafe. We are going back to the old schedule, folks. We're going back to the 4 o'clock. If you want to eat, get there at 4. Chat with your friends, talk politics, buy a glass of wine, and the restaurant will be open. And then the regular meeting, if you don't want to do all that, then please come at 5. If you want to hang around, talk to our speakers, to our candidates, who's ever there for come at 4. And if you don't want to do that, you just want to get to the business of the meeting, come at 5 at the Red Rooster Cafe, 901 North Main Street. We have our Cottonwood Democratic meeting tomorrow with that change. 1 p.m. on Saturday, Terry Goddard's going to be in town to talk about Outlaw Dirty Money, his statewide campaign to have a constitutional amendment in Arizona to outlaw all of this foreign money, this out-of-state money and in-state money coming in, these huge, to having people buy the offices of Arizona, which has happened in the last several cycles. So he'll be in Cottonwood 1 p.m. on Saturday. Terry Goddard himself, former attorney general, former mayor of Phoenix, a great public servant, will be there. Okay, folks, don't forget you can catch this show and all our shows at vvid.org. vvid.org has the archive of our show.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.